Here we are with Brad Hayes, Associate Professor of Political Science at Union College and a great mind. Okay, let's go to DACA. Trump says he's open to it. Then he's not open to it. They come up with a solution. He said, bring me a solution. They bring him a solution. He says, I don't want to do it. What's going on?
I think you pretty much summed it up pretty well. Trump has said that he cares about Dreamers. And yet he was the one who killed off DACA. He was the one that lobbied hard against any immigration bill that would extend legal protections to Dreamers other than his own, which contained any number of hardline immigration positions. And so you have this kind of interesting reality that if Trump really cared about Dreamers, then you could do something about Dreamers. I think
so.
That makes him a lying liar,
right? Again,
I think that's right. And this is an instance where almost quote Biggie that there are more power, more problems, right? And in other words, that he's created a particular problem for himself here, right? Trump is going to be faced in the coming weeks with either enforcing the deportation of Dreamers, right? And this was highly unpopular, right? Extending legal protection for Dreamers is almost two times more popular than Trump himself. Alternatively, he could delay enforcement so that, delay deportations, which kind of undercuts his own move to revoke DACA. Or he could try to reestablish DACA protections unilaterally, which would undercut his institutional argument and the policy argument, and it would tick off his base. So he's got some real problems here that he himself has created. And in terms of the way out, it's not clear. Obviously, he's attempting to blame Democrats for failing to compromise. But I think here, setting aside the reality of the impact on Dreamers, Democrats as a party are in a fairly good position here. They're seen as the kind of the pro-immigration party, and that they have kind of framed themselves as being unwilling to capitulate to the hardline immigration provisions within that particular bill. So they seem like they could actually reap some political benefits for Trump's, in some ways, what I see as mishandling of this particular issue. And one of the things that's interesting is that I thought for a while that perhaps the courts might save Trump from himself here, right? The courts, there have been two different court rulings that have enjoined the end of DACA. And what's so interesting is that the administration has requested an expedited appeal to the United States Supreme Court. In fact, there was a question about whether they would be moving on that early in the week. No announcement was forthcoming, so I'm not sure if that means that they'll make that announcement next week or whatnot. But whatever the case, if the court was willing to hear it on an expedited basis, they may in fact decide the fate of DACA by mid to late June. But if they don't, right, the Court of Appeals will go forward with an expedited review in the Ninth Circuit and perhaps in the Second Circuit as well. And that'll be decided probably again in the early summer. But it's likely then to be appealed up before the Supreme Court, which pushes this off a little bit. In some ways, I would think that the administration would want this to be delayed.
Sure.
Right? I mean, so that you could say, oh, judicial interference. In the meanwhile, you're being saved from actually having to face this move of ordering the deportation of Dreamers. And yet, again, they didn't do that, which I think is a real head scratcher. Unless, of course, we go back to the Chartok hypothesis that it's all about appealing to the base and it just nothing else matters. And in that sense, perhaps it makes sense. But it's still going to put him in a very challenging position.
Brad Hayes, I'm going to ask you to do something that I don't know that you can, but I'm going to try with you. I'm going to do four things in 4 minutes. So you have a minute on each.
Okay.
Okay, you ready here? The return of Mitt Romney.
Again, puts Trump in a strange position. Romney has been one of his major critics in the Republican Party, and yet he is now in a position where, at least on Twitter, he has endorsed his candidacy and seems to be welcoming into the party as a way of continuing to hold the Senate.
And Mitch McConnell told him he had to, meaning, what, do you want to be in the minority?
Right.
Okay, the Schumer-McConnell relationship. A lot of people are criticizing Schumer for being, you know, too amenable to McConnell. What do you think in a minute?
I think this is kind of nice, actually. I mean, this is a respite from the normal vicious party politics that has, you know, become the norm. And so a few moments of levity between the two, I think, is okay. Keep in mind that these two have a fairly close working relationship. I mean, at least their staffs do. They have to coordinate all the time on any number of different issues and bills that are working their way through. And so they do have a relationship, and that needs to be a working relationship. So anything that can help, you know, us find some measure of connection, I think, is actually useful. And I don't think it has much in terms of policy effects. So mostly it's symbolic.
Gun control.
A child shall lead them. You know, this is a really interesting moment where, of course, we've had mass shootings become a part of the fabric of our society. And nothing happens in terms of reforms. But Parkland, the initial response has felt a little different, right? There's been kind of this overlapping of the mourning period and outrage with student activism. And millennials have grown up with shootings as part of their educational experience, and they're voicing anger and vision and a certain kind of commitment to political activism to change this. And I think this, there's a real question here about whether this can translate to sustained energy. One of the problems with for gun control advocates is sustaining energy. They don't do it. In other words, that people get upset right after a shooting, and then it regresses to the norm, and they haven't been able to sustain the mobilization in order to bring about real reform. Are we seeing a change here with these marches, with the protests, with these rather compelling student speakers? And I think that, you know, very much remains to be seen. The NRA's playbook is going to be to you know, let this play out and be pretty quiet and reserved, and let it go away. But if you can sustain this, I think it's powerful. And one last thing, this is yet another major issue for the GOP and its generational divide. The last two presidential elections have seen millennial support for the Republican president be stuck at 37%. And that's only going to grow if they appear non-responsive to the young generation. And when we think about sustained voting patterns changing the distribution of power in the United States, GOP officials should be really worried about what happens when this generation begins to vote regularly.
And last question, it looks like maybe a former vice president in the last administration, Joe Biden, might run for president.
Yeah, we'll see. He hasn't said no. He's got a book out. Those are two big checks. And he's going to some key states and pressing the flesh. So we'll see. I mean, Joe remains very popular in the Democratic Party. So, you know, I think that's something to watch.
Yeah. I'd vote for Mueller myself. Brad Hayes is Associate Professor of Political Science at Union College. He holds a PhD in Government and Politics at the University of Maryland, and we are always delighted to have him with us. He is our scholar in residence. Thank you so much, Brad.
Great fun, Alan. Thanks.